Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
There's a whole fleet of them. Look on the ASA. Oh my gosh. They're all going against the wind.
It was basically a cube with inside of sphere where the points of the cube were touching outside of the sphere.
So this isn't anything that just is limited to the United States. It's a worldwide phenomenon.
Hi everyone, and welcome to a very special festive holiday edition of That UFO Podcast. We have a Room 101 Christmas special, and before I introduce the guests, I just want to say thank you everyone for listening to the podcast this year. 2020, as crazy as it's been, has been the year that the podcast started, and it has been crazy successful beyond anything I could have dreamed of. So thank you very much. Some of the guys that made that happen will be joining me on the podcast tonight, and it's the same thing who were on our last roundtable that got some amazing reviews, some great feedback as well. So I thought it only fitting to add them back on to one of the final podcasts of the year. Just before I introduce them, I would just want to explain again the Room 101 concept, because it's something not everyone totally gets depending what side of the pond you are on. So Room 101 was famously a room that wasn't the nicest place, from the book novel 1948 by George Orwell. Or sorry, 1984 by George Orwell. It was written in 1948, funny enough. However, it was also a UK comedy show where basically a chat show host would get a guest on and they could bin a thing, a person, a concept, an idea, something they didn't like to Room 101 so it would be gone forever. But they had to vote whether to keep it or to bin it. That's what we are doing, just to frame the conversation on ufology. So what we're looking for was submissions from guests and listeners on something they would like to remove from ufology. One thing or person or concept, an idea they think that ufology would be better off without. And we got 60, 70, 80 different submissions. So we're not going to have time on this show to go through them all. So what I've done is I've picked a selection of you, the listeners' submissions, which I've put on the end. We've got 10 guest submissions and the 3 submissions and entries from the co-hosts on the podcast as well. There'll be a separate bonus show that I'll do. It'll be with myself or with some of the guys on the rest of the listener submissions as well. So look out for that in the next couple of days. The lineup that we're going to be going through on this podcast is going to have Sean Cahill, Chase Klitsky, Deep Prasad, Ryan Sprag, David Marceau, Jeremy McGowan, Simeon Hine, Jay from Project Unity, Joe Murgia, and special guest submission from none other than Mick West himself. I did ask Mick to give a submission. It is the festive time of year, a time of giving and understanding, and I thought it only fair to invite Mick to give his submission to Room 101. That will be the last one of the guest submissions as well. If you could see, Dave is making a seagull pattern on his camera as well. It's a pity we don't release the videos of these, but yeah, so it's a really good show. There's a lot of really good ones lined up as well, folks, so I'm sure you'll enjoy it. But let me get you introduced to the guys. First up, Dave from Shadows of Your Mind magazine. Dave, how are we doing this evening?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks mate. Glad the last issue's out of the way.
It is, and there's a cheap plug straight away, as Mick Foley used to say in the wrestling, for the magazine. Do you want to just quickly tell us a little bit about what's in the latest issue?
Well, if you remember a couple of years ago, Daniel Craig did an interview straight after Spectre, and he was asked if he wanted to do James Bond again. And that's kind of how I feel we're doing the next issue at the moment. It's like, I'd rather slip my wrists. But no, the issue is like, you know, it's the 40th anniversary of Rendlesham coming up in a couple of weeks, or... sorry, next week, isn't it?
It'll be a couple of weeks. It'll be next week. It'll have been a few months ago, a few years ago, just depending on when this gets listened to. Yeah, so delete is applicable.
Anniversary every year. But yeah, there's Chase Kletsky's in there. Fantastic article in which she doesn't pull any punches. You got MK Rose, the incredible filmmaker who released The Gulf of Silence recently, which if anybody hasn't seen it yet, I recommend you do so. And there's the video game, which is attempting to push the disclosure conversation forward in 2021. End of the beginning, so I recommend that people check that out as well.
Yep, and Jim Yates of Snake Takes Video Games, who is creating that, was interviewed a couple of months ago by myself on the podcast as well, so that'll go hand in hand with the article if you can listen and read both of those. Awesome, Dave, thanks for joining us. Next up, we have all the way from Buenos Aires, John, or as you would know him, Undead Gaucho. John, how are we doing this evening?
Doing good, man. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be here with you guys. It's going to be a fun night.
Awesome. And you've been doing quite a few lives on your YouTube recently. How have those been going?
Good. I actually have started to get a little bit more comfortable. You know, at first, going live just feels a little strange, just because it's like I might say something wrong or say something backwards. I can't edit it out, you know. But now I'm having a great time, and I'm happy to see all of you that are there in the live chat always, and it's just, it feels good to catch up with everybody every week, so.
Awesome. I was going to do this live, but just knowing how poor John is at getting things right first time, we decided to record, and it's the easiest way just to edit out all his mistakes. So, yeah. But yeah, no, make sure you're checking out Gaucho's YouTube channel and subscribe to that as well. Some really good stuff on there. Even just the conversations that pop up in the chat rooms are a fun place to be in too. And last but potentially least, I don't know, we have Dan, regular co-host, as you know him, the Zignal. Dan, how are we doing tonight?
Hey, that was a lovely introduction.
And do you know what? It would have been much nicer had it. Dan was really, really early for the recording, around 2 hours early, and then turned up 5 minutes late for the actual recording.
Yeah, stylishly late, right? Fashionably late, even.
But I believe you have been, just to tie it back into the magazine, you've been watching some of Dave's recommendations, haven't you, from his, in the latest issue, the top 10 alien TV series to watch?
Yeah. I watched the 2019 War of the Worlds series, not to be confused with the BBC one. It's 8 episodes long, not 3. Much, much better too. And also the adaptation of Childhood's End, which was fantastic.
Nice. I'll be catching up with that War of the Worlds as well. I'm really looking forward to that. But listen, without further ado, folks, let's get in. So first up, we have Sean Cahill. Sean Cahill was the second guest on that UFO podcast, which seems an eternity ago, but it was back in May. It might have been the end of the first lockdown, before the start. I don't know. It just, there's been a lot of lockdowns and quarantines and isolations this year for everyone. So, but yeah, Sean was very gracious, came on as my second ever guest on the podcast. Someone I've been really lucky to keep in touch with a lot since as well. He's a really great guy. You'll know him as Minty Hyperspace as well on Twitter. And he's recently just released some cool meditation stuff as well, which I suggest, especially in these kind of crazy times, everyone could have a little bit of use out of. So first up, I'm going to play an audio clip Sean submitted of his Room 101 submission.
Hi, I'm Sean Cahill, and you're listening to That UFO Podcast with Andy McGrillin. If there was one thing that I would bin or throw away from ufology, it would have to be one source anything, whether it's a one source witness, a photograph with no context, a story with no photograph, anything that just can't back itself up, that can't triangulate, ends up becoming just interesting. And at some point, we'll need to get all of the disparate information together, the anecdotal information that just doesn't quite fit with a logical stream, and see if there's data to be gathered from there. But at the moment, I think that data that triangulates is most important, and that we need to get rid of anything that has only one source, a one-source theory or one line of data. We need a lot more triangulation. So I think that's what I'd get rid of.
That was the smooth-toned Sean Cahill. My wife loves his voice. You know, whenever I speak to Sean or if I'm playing a clip, or she heard that clip and, yeah, it's mesmerising. So that's a free one for you for Christmas. So thank you very much to Sean for that one. But Sean's submission to Room 101 is basically only having one source, whether that's one story, one witness, one photograph, one video, with nothing to corroborate. Yeah, so let's go to Dave first on that one. What are your thoughts on one source?
Well, yeah, cheers, mate. It's a double-edged sword, I think. At the same time, we got the Peter and the Wolf kind of scenario where you just got one person saying, oh, I saw this in the sky, or I managed to take a photo of it. No one believes you, even though the event actually did happen. The other side of it is it's very easy for a person to fake something just for attention. I mean, everyone knows that if you want hard evidence, then it needs a group of witnesses or someone to corroborate what you've seen. It might not necessarily be the same thing that they've seen, but if something happened at that exact same time, then at least you got someone to back you up. But I kind of agree with Sean. There's too many of them about. But if we can sort it out, then, I don't know on this one, actually.
I mean, I think we've all had, I mean, speaking to you individually, privately, and obviously, John, you've been a guest on the podcast as well. We've all had incidents happen that we were the only witness to it as well. We've been there with other people as well, but like I saw that black triangle driving home. Other people were on the road and saw it as well, but I don't know any of those people. I'm not in touch with them. I don't know who they are. And it's just my word that I saw this, and you get the laughs and, all right, okay. Or you get people interested who want to know a little bit more, but like you say, it's not just my story. It's not other people have got pictures of it. It's just me. It's not like, again, the most famous one would have to be, I suppose, the Phoenix Lights, where thousands of people over the course of, you know, a few nights had this huge experience and huge sighting. I feel it's funny that even though it was the mid-90s, it's just a little bit too far back for it to still be mega relevant, in the sense that if it had happened just 5 or 6 years later, then maybe it's something we would have had better video from, better pictures from, more of a media presence, because I think a lot changed in the media. Technology changed a lot in those 5 or 6 years up into the early 2000s. So, yeah, but no, yeah, I'm with you on that one. It's a bit of a double-edged sword. Gaucho, what are your thoughts then on Sean's only having one source?
Exactly what you guys said. It is definitely a double-edged sword, because the first thing that popped in my mind when I heard that was, people's personal experiences where they don't have a photo or don't have anybody to back up their experience. And these days, throughout the years in ufology, there are people that confabulate stories, but really, honestly, at the end of the day, there's only a handful of people that have really benefited, like from a book or something like that, from these kinds of stories. The rest of it is just, it doesn't benefit you at all, really. Other than it can make you maybe see reality a little bit different. So whenever I hear somebody tell me a story, or I see, or I read an experience or something, I just think of that automatically. So I personally think it's a good idea. It's interesting what he brought up, because, I mean, everyone wants good cases with multiple witnesses and all the data and all the photos. And like he said,
triangulate.
Yeah, triangulating the data. But there's going to be really important cases that, unless we look past this idea that, like, if they don't have anything to back it up, then there's no way to figure out if it's real or not. I think we need to do a lot more digging sometimes in these kinds of cases. Like, personally, you need to take their story, listen to what happened to them, and then see what you can find. And if you can't find anything, you can't find anything. But at the end of the day, we can't just forget about those people or not take their cases seriously or their experiences seriously. So I wouldn't put it in the bin personally. But I see how it's a double-edged sword.
And just, I'll bring in Dan on this one as well. I don't know if Sean's alluding to this, but I suppose most recently we've had the debrief dropped that picture of a potential balloon, whether it was a Batman party balloon, whether it was a Mylar balloon that was up recording weather phenomena, whether it was something else altogether. It was a picture presented without any real context. And everyone, and I suppose including ourselves, we filled in the gaps, didn't we? The picture was put online. It was obviously in the cockpit of some fighter jet, and there was an object hovering in the sky. So given our interest and our nature and who was dropping it and the context and the conversation at the time, we all jumped to UFO and so quick, or UAP, and so quickly it was identified as a potentially this Batman party balloon. And then there was, yeah, but there's more data, but we don't have that data. And is that what Sean's getting at here, Dan, do you think?
Yeah, that's what I feel about too. Just the one single photograph, no story, no other data attached to it, apart from the EXIF data, which, you know, I'm not sure if your listeners kind of followed what happened, but the initial report said that it was a 2018 incident, and the data on the photo suggested it was a 2019 incident. And there was a bit of discovery going on, we'll say. So it was really helpful to have that second bit of data to help triangulate, exactly like Sean said, who took it, where they were, and kind of get some other ideas. Without that extra data, it's just a random picture. As cool as it is, as much as you know the backstory and you know that it's come from the UAPTF report, it would just be a random photo. And it's hard to say that a photo on its own with no story around it and no other data is worth any more than just some random person coming up and telling you a story and then walking off into the night. It's just a story that goes in the grey basket forevermore, and you'll never know if you know, you'll never be able to confirm it. You can never completely shred it and get rid of it. It just kind of hovers there. And even if in the future we do get some kind of disclosure, that grey basket is always going to be there, because some of these experiences are very, very off the charts. Woo, I'll say. We all know the role that subjectivity plays with our consciousness and so on and so forth. But I feel what Sean's getting at is that we need to be able to paint an objective picture of the phenomenon so that we can have a conversation about it.
Yeah. What I like that this is going to give us a chance to do as well is almost summarize a lot of what's happened in 2020. Because I think naturally a lot of the events, and I think we probably realize as we go through this, a lot has happened this year. And as we've touched on in previous shows and previous conversations, it used to be years between cases and events and information being leaked out. And now it seems to be almost every single week we've got something else. Some weeks we've got multiple articles or leaks or photographs or videos coming out or more information on an old video. So we're really lucky and probably don't realise, because we're living in the time, how much is really coming out. So gents, I'm going to ask you then, Sean Cahill has submitted having only one source of information for any particular case. Dave, are we keeping only one source, or are we sending that to Room 101 and binning it from ufology?
To be honest, I think we have to keep it, because as Gesho said, we can't discount just one person's testimony. They might be telling the truth.
Fair enough. So that's one vote for keep. Gaucho?
Yeah, I think we should keep it as well, because, you know, like you said, Dan, first that photo showed up. But if it wasn't for people in the community digging and looking into that photo, we would have never got that extra information. And that's what I'm saying. It always starts as one source, one thing, one person. It's up to us to dig deeper, look past it. If we don't find anything, then it goes in the bin, like you said. But if not, we got to keep it just in case.
So is it a clean sweep, or is Dan, who didn't want any deciding votes, but he's going to get a kind of dead rubber here because it's already been decided, what are you going for? Would you consign it to Room 101, or are we keeping it?
I'm going to keep it just because of the role or the emerging role of subjectivity in consciousness. A lot of these experiences are very strange, and two people can have very different experiences being stood next to each other. So on the off chance that disparate data can triangulate and correlate, I'm going to keep it.
Okay, so Sean, thank you very much for that submission. However, the gents have voted that we're going to keep that one as well. And any listeners, please feel free to get in touch with the show and let us know your thoughts on these as well as you listen and go through. So only one source seems to still have its place in ufology for the panel.
Sorry, Sean.
Everybody loves you. He's such a nice guy.
He's awesome, by the way.
He is. And do you know what? He's a guy who I think is going to have a big role to play in a lot of things, and one of the voices, hopefully, that's really prominent in 2021 as well.
It is a valuable point. I was just going to say it is a well-made point by Sean, even though we're not pouring in the room. You know, if we put one source experiences up on a pedestal, then we suddenly have to accept Corey Good, and I don't want to do that.
Well, there's a name that came up a lot in people's submissions. So next up is the lovely Chase Klutzke. Chase was a guest on the podcast a couple of months ago. Just to plug, Shadows of Your Mind magazine has a great article with Dave in the most recent publication as well. Goes into a lot of detail that she discussed on the show with myself, and goes a little bit further as well. And like Dave said, Chase pulls no punches. She's really honest, and it's really refreshing as well. There's no comments. There's no "I won't discuss that." But she's very logical as well, and what she says makes sense. So, but yeah, Chase, I'll read out what she had submitted for the show. So Chase didn't send an audio. We've got some text submissions as well from guests. Chase said, "I'm tired of thin skin."
Wait, are you going to do an impression?
Oh, do you know what? I was going to frame that and say I'm not going to do the voice, but... I'm tired of thin-skinned eagles. No, I'm not going to do that. As much as some of the listeners stateside would understand that better, you can't imitate Chase. So I'm tired of the thin-skinned egos. There should be zero tolerance for the bullying that goes on. If you talk publicly about someone with unverified gossip, it tells more about that person running their mouth. Chase is highlighting something, again, that's been prevalent in 2020. We have seen a lot of bandwagon jumping, a lot of people calling out people, a lot of name calling, not just on, you know, the UFO Twitter, as it's become famous or infamous, but just all over ufology, okay? Not everyone has to agree, just for my two cents. Not everyone has to agree. Not everyone has to like each other. Not everyone has to agree with each other's opinion. This would be a really boring subject if everyone agreed with each other. And that's not the point. And like we're going to find out with further submissions down the line, we don't know what's going on with this. Even the people who are in the know as such have come out and said themselves, if they're being honest, they don't really know. So again, to have personal attacks because of what someone believes or doesn't believe, there are plenty of things I don't believe. There's plenty of stories I hear and plenty of, you know, testimonies and people's opinions that I just don't agree with. However, that's not to say they might not be right and they don't deserve to have their two cents anyway. So, you know, I've got this podcast and this platform that people like you listening to this have allowed me to have, and the guys coming on have allowed me to have my say. Doesn't mean it's worth any more or any less than anyone else's. So there you go. So yeah, thin-skinned egos and bullying there from Chase. I imagine this one's probably going to be pretty unanimous. However, you never know. So let's start off with Gaucho.
Sorry, I was muted.
No, that's all right. So are we binning or keeping the thin-skinned egos?
Oh, we're going to bin them 100%. I'm not a big fan of bullies. And I also think that there's a way to have a healthy conversation with somebody without insulting them or jumping at people's throats. And sometimes it's not even the insult. Sometimes it's just like, it's just people acting kind of weird in 2020, if you ask me. But I think we should bin it. I don't think it'll ever happen. But out of my hate for bullies, I'm going to bin this one because I would love to just get rid of all of them.
Yeah, it's the keyboard warrior thing comes to mind, that everyone's brave behind a keyboard, and would you say it to someone's face? And the part about being thin-skinned, now, we live in an age where, regardless of what your opinion is, mental health is huge around the globe, and people have various different issues. Just personally, my background and where I'm from Scotland, and I don't tend to get upset or offended at anything. I'm not casting a rod out now for abuse, but, you know, I've been really lucky and surprised, as I've said to Dan on many occasions privately, I can't believe how little to no abuse that I've had since I started this podcast. It's almost like, you know, disappointing in a way. But I don't get upset. I don't get offended. It's just if people disagree, they disagree. It's fine. And I use humour like most Scottish people do and most British folk do as a way to kind of just get by in life. So that's fine. And I think if you're going to have an ego and you're going to put yourself out there on a platform like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, you know, Snapchat like the kids use these days, the cool ones anyway, YouTube, you put yourself out there on YouTube, Gaucho, doing your lives. You know, J Project Unity does a lot of lives, a lot of premieres. You put yourself out there to an audience and people just jump on that and they can attack because they're behind a keyboard, behind a screen. They don't agree with your opinion and they feel that's right. But you're saying about binning that, which, yeah, I'm not surprised, obviously.
It's just, like I said, there's healthy ways to do it. We're all adults. There's not any little kids in this field. I haven't noticed any, at least. We're all grown people. I mean, we should be able to have healthy conversations without trolling people. And I understand, like, not everybody's going to be on the same page, and some people don't get along. It's just life. But honestly, too, like, I never get that bothered. I've had some crazy messages, you know, like, or responses to videos, and I kind of just laugh and shrug it off. But I'm also the kind of guy that doesn't mind a little dirt, you know? I don't mind rolling around in the mud a little bit. It doesn't hurt, but yeah, no bullies. Just for the love of the community, I'm throwing that in 101 for sure.
No, that's fair. And Dan, I'll bring you in here on this one. And let's be honest, we have all, given the subject and what we are talking about here, the potential of what we're talking about with the phenomenon and everything that entails, you get enough giggles and laughs and abuse in various different ways from outside of the community, so we could probably do without it in the community, Dan, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. This is definitely going in room 101 for me. not only does it make me think of everything you guys just discussed, but I think of kind of cheesily, I guess, of the end of Ratatouille, you know, the a great cook can come from anywhere. and it's true. You know, you could just cross wires with someone in the community because you read a little bit of text wrong and suddenly you're cut off from an idea that would have blown your mind and made you see the world in a completely different way. Like, don't do that to yourself. You know, like, don't spend time arguing with people online. If you do that, you could be using the time to do something better instead of feeding this negative emotion that's only going to grow, you know, on the other end of the conversation. And we'll do it to more people. And I would also add that if you have had an exchange with somebody and you do tap out at a certain point, don't leave insults on your way out. Like, I see that all too many times, just trying to get the last word in, and they act as if that's not happening. But they've clearly spent a while trying to think up like a pun or an insult to the person that they're talking with, and just, you know, bluntly, just grow up. This isn't the revolution that this subject and disclosure will bring isn't for children. So put your big pants on in room 101.
I like that.
Thank you.
I like that.
And Dave, to wrap that one up then. So again, thin-skinned egos in the world of UFOs and ufology.
Yeah, well, I've had both personal experience and I've interviewed people who have suffered with this as well. The biggest person being Marie Kayali, who is an experiencer. She suffered a torrent of abuse from people like Simon Parks and Miles Johnston and all their kind of keyboard militia. And in the end, it just got too much for her and she just disappeared. I mean, that's, if you look into all that, that's a long, horrible story that she went through. But I think Chase may be alluding to the treatment that Christopher Bledsoe received as well on Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah.
Because this is a guy who's honest as the day is long. He's basically, you know, our generation's Travis Walton without the 5-day disappearance. But, you know, he's such a genuine guy. And he was just posting things up and then he was getting all the trolls. And his son Ryan is getting the same abuse from certain quarters, people who are, you know, FOIA chasing paperwork junkies. You know, they're just giving him loads of abuse online saying, oh, where's your evidence? Where's your evidence? Can you corroborate all this? And it's just not good. We don't need this in, you wouldn't put up with it in real life, in the street. You wouldn't put up with it if someone attacked your family. So why are you hiding behind a keyboard and doing it in 140 pixels? 140 characters, or, you know, just hiding behind Facebook. If you got something to say, pick a location and say it to my grill.
And like you say, people at the Bledsoes as well, like no matter what evidence, there's a lot of mic drops being made here at the cameras and thumbs up. A lot of it, the evidence that does go online, and this alludes to what I was saying before, it doesn't matter how good or how poor it is, people will choose whether to believe it or not. So no matter what the Bledsoes put online, and the, I suppose with them, the sheer volume and the weight of what they put online,
yeah,
it still gets bashed, or people just are just waiting to tear it down, aren't they?
Well, yeah, I mean, Chris Bledsoe, he's had Grant Cameron visit his property. He's had Jim Semivan. He's actually spent Easter with Jim Semivan. He's had Colonel John Alexander visit his property and seen something, which he's put in his own book. You know, these high-ranking people do not just turn up at somebody's house if there's nothing going on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, absolutely thin-skinned egos. I mean, I got blocked by a certain radio show host for questioning his discernment after he came out and was publicly criticising whether TTSA had actually done anything for the subject in the last 3 years. That's just a ridiculous thing to say. If it wasn't for TTSA, we wouldn't have conversations in front of the Senate, for a start. It wouldn't be on all these defence bills. And, you know, if you're going to block me for saying, well, for suggesting who you put on a pedestal for 3 years on your radio show, then fine. Deal with it in your own way. There's a lot of man children in this community, I've noticed.
Yeah. And listen, I feel it's fair to say we've said enough on that one. Everyone's gone with that. That is something that ufology would be better without, those kind of thin-skinned egos, the name-calling, the childishness. It's across the board, three bins, yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yep.
Burn it.
Awesome.
Burn it, yeah.
Chase Klutzke, thank you very much. That is binned and consigned to room 101. Next up, and this follows on nicely, someone who this year has had their fair share of controversy, someone who has had a lot of back and forwards with folk online, has, and listen, I've always been fair, they've done a bit of blocking, they've been blocked themselves. At Deep Prasad came onto my podcast and I gave him the platform, and I got a little bit of, you know, not abuse, but people gave me a couple of messages that they weren't necessarily happy I was giving them a platform to make his case in point after some stuff leaked out online that he may or may not have been as honest as he said he was and his background, and but at least give him the option, like you say, it's not just on Twitter or on Facebook or on a message, to come on and speak and answer some questions. And I gave him that opportunity on the podcast as well. So the Deep Prasad interview is back in the archives. People can go on and check those out. But I'm going to play the clip now from Deep Prasad and what he's looking to put into room 101.
What would I send to room 101? This is a great question and I really love it. I think it's a neat idea. The thing that I would send to room 101, it's a bit meta, but it's any descriptor word that we've ever come up with to describe any facet of the phenomenon. So that includes the word ultra-terrestrial, extraterrestrial, interdimensional, angels, or what have you. All of these words to describe what it is that we're dealing with is a trap, in my opinion. It bogs us down. It carries tons of assumptions. Some of those assumptions are unfounded, and it keeps us trapped in this sort of limited worldview of understanding something that is far outside our worldview and our vocabulary. So I think that it should be replaced instead with new frameworks of understanding instead.
So that was Deep Prasad, no stranger to controversy himself, a very bright and intelligent young man, really nice to speak to. He is not everyone's cup of tea, but again, I think Deep has had that back and forward with people, and he's matured a little bit this year, I would say, as well. And Deep's a nice guy, and I look forward to having him back on the podcast next year. But like I've said, you don't have to agree with everyone. However, we'll go with Dan. Dan, you are an amiable chap yourself, and what are your thoughts then on Deep going with descriptive words for the phenomenon, using words like interdimensional, multidimensional, you know, even UFO, alien, spaceship, flying saucer? He feels that we're pegging it down and trying to kind of pigeonhole something that we really don't understand.
Yeah, I see where Deep's coming from. It's hard to describe something that you literally have no experience with to describe. No one else has seen, you know, if you see something, if say for example, just grab any kind of, in fact, let's use one that they brought up, Travis Walton. You know, that's half of what Travis went through. The words he's using to describe his experience are from our, wait, hold on, I'm going to have to go back a bit. the words that Travis is using to describe his experience are words that are already in the English language. They're built upon the world that we experience to describe it to each other so that we can communicate, so that we can survive. Anything outside of that is going to be really, really, really hard to describe. You're going to end up calling it something like the color out of space, right? Just something very, very abstract. But I just wonder whether words like ultra-terrestrial, extraterrestrial, you know, interdimensional, these things are less kind of definitive labels and more us searching in the dark for a label that fits.
As to how we would understand it. Yeah, no, that's a really good shout. Dave, what are your thoughts on Deep's thoughts about the descriptions of a man who writes, you know, for the subject at length? And like I've said before, not blown smoke, yeah. I'll be honest, you've got the best magazine out there on the subject. So as someone who writes and uses these words and speaks to people who use these words in this language, what are your thoughts on what Deep had to say?
Thanks for the cheap plug again, mate. Appreciate it. But yeah, Deep has a point, but then at the end of the day, we are just using words that other people have used in the past to describe this. I mean, back in the 50s, it was just assumed that all this was extraterrestrial. They were coming from another planet, another galaxy, far, far away, another universe, whatever. It wasn't until things got a bit weird. I think John Keel was the first one to use the word ultra-terrestrial. During these investigations into the Mothman case and Point Pleasant and all around there. And I think we have to kind of, like Dan said, you need to, if people want to put a label on it, then if it doesn't fit the current criteria that we do have, then you're going to need to categorize it some in a different way. Well, it's a bit like music genres in a way. I mean, you can't just say all heavy metal is heavy metal. You've got, you know, about 30 different offshoots of heavy metal depending on the style of the music, the style of the vocals, whether it's detuned or, you know, operatic or anything like that. So I think, you know, interdimensional, crypto-terrestrial, hyper-terrestrial, ultra-terrestrial, all those kind of things, they are important depending on your own point of view. So I think that's something you have to make peace with yourself.
Yeah, and I think like Dan was saying as well, it's just labels we're putting on these things to help us understand a little bit better and you've mentioned categorizing a little bit, and it's crazy because what we're trying to categorize something that we don't know. It's changed so much from 50 years ago that, and it's almost an easier 70 years ago that we have flying saucers coming from Mars. That was it. And then there's
space. And then you get Skinwalker Ranch. How do you qualify that?
Where everything seems to be happening. And then you get people like, you know, controversial character Tom DeLonge talking about how reality and the phenomenon is so much stranger than we can even imagine. And that's where, like I say, and this is my goal for 2021 is to ask Lou Elizondo on this podcast the question, what does he not know that he would like to know about the phenomenon? Because that's something that doesn't break his NDA. Because, you know, what do you not know that you would like to know? So, and that's for me. It's like that would really interest me. Is that is there something that it just ends up all the stuff we talk about now? Let's just put Greer, good, anyone in the subject that you want to name, good, bad, vilified or not, Alejandro Rojas, Jay from Project Unity, Dan Zetterstrom. Dan, do you want me to use your surname?
You can use my surname. It was in the magazine.
So. Oh yeah, okay, that's
it's
right.
Imprint,
yeah. I am revealed. I am out.
So yeah, sorry. So I've just outed Dan as well. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, so that's fine. So yeah. So again, I'll just leave that in, folks. That's what happens. That saves me an edit. All these people.
It's cool. I've been sending people mail anyway with the things I've been making. So
is that mail from your Redbubble store, Dan? Are you promoting that in the?
Oh yeah, the Redbubble store and the patches, yeah.
Yeah, the patches, and we'll get to the patches later on. I've got a note for that anyway. But yeah, so again, all these people using all these different descriptives for the UFO. I've been asking the question, UFO or UAP, and it's just like, it's just how we are describing it. Is it going to end up that all the stuff that we all think is all sort of wrong and basic, or even just like, well, yeah, that's a little bit of it, but it's only 5% of everything that's going on, and everything else just blows our mind. And that's what guys like Tom DeLonge are getting at, where you really don't get what's going on. You can't even imagine all this stuff that's, you know, that we find out Atlantis is part of it, and then there are things coming from other planets and Earth planets and different dimensions, and it's just all this crazy, weird, wonderful multiverse, you know, of madness. Which is the name of the new Doctor Strange movie, I've just realised, but yeah. So
unless it's all a simulation.
Unless it's, oh yeah, that caused a whole argument last time online. But yeah, so no, I can definitely see what Deep's getting at. And Gaucho, I'll bring you on this one as well then. So descriptive words for the phenomena.
You know, I totally understand what he's saying though, because recently with this talk of USOs and UFOs and transmedium travel, I've been thinking like, so it's basically all the same thing. So for us to call it a UFO, an unidentified flying object, and then us to call it a USO, an unidentified submerged object, and then unidentified aerial phenomenon, we're going to have to change that completely. Because if they can go through the sky and in the water and through portals and things like that, we need a new word to classify these craft, because it seems like we're putting them in corners when they can jump all over the board.
Let me ask you, John, I want to ask a question then. So you've used the word there, we. So we, the collective, let's go for UFO community, have all these different categories and all these different ways we describe the subject. The mainstream public and you know, the mainstream media don't really care about UAP. They don't care about crypto, hyper-terrestrial, ultra-terrestrial. Yeah. They don't care about super-terrestrials, whatever. They know UFO and they know alien. So for them, is it still right that those are terms that still stick around, because that makes sense? And ultimately, when this does break big, because it's not, whatever, regardless what anyone says, the conversation, yes, it's moved forward. It's not broken into the mainstream properly yet, because it's not on every night on the news, and it's not a huge scientific study. Is it right that it's going to be UFO and it's going to be alien that's talked about for a long time when this does make it big?
Yeah, it will be. But I think also us calling it unidentified flying objects is what's actually tripped us up all these years and made us miss, you know, that these things could obviously fly through water and fly through the sky and do all the amazing things that they can. Because back in the day, they were like unidentified flying objects, instead of thinking, well, obviously this thing can fly through the sea as well. If it can shoot around the skies and fly into space and drop down and do all the things that it's doing. I think that literally has made us look away from the bigger picture. So what Deep is saying actually makes sense. And like, we use these terms to classify different things. I don't know if we can throw it into Room 101, but it does make sense what he's saying. Because I think sometimes having all these terms and these different words that we use to classify the phenomenon, that is actually, the phenomenon can't be put in a box.
It makes me think of two famous people involved in the subject. One being Buzz Lightyear, who famously said, "I'm not flying, I'm falling with style." And Bob Lazar obviously claimed that, I remember he used the analogy that the craft don't fly, and he used the concept of putting a bowling ball on a bed mattress. Mm-hmm. And if you put your fist down in front of the bowling ball, not touching the ball, because you've made a space in front of it, the ball will roll forward. And imagine that you're constantly pushing the space down in front of one of these craft, that mm-hmm. it's always falling forward. And maybe these things are, like you say, they're not flying necessarily in the way we understand it. They're falling or moving. And we've got Dave wants to come in on that.
Yeah, I just want to correct you on one point there, mate.
Was it the Buzz Lightyear quote?
Yeah, it was Woody that said that Buzz wasn't flying, he was falling with style. Because Buzz was delusional, he did think he was actually flying.
I believe in the second film, Buzz brings that quote back and says it himself, so I'm going to quote Toy Story 2 on that one, Dave. But you're quite right, it was Woody. But you know what, I'm glad I've got the Bob Lazar, you know, the physics of that one right, because it's not my forte. So let's go around then. Some really good insight on that one. It's a really good point brought up from Deep, and I like he's went for the meta, being one of the young kids as well. It makes me feel so old calling someone young when I'm 34. Dan, do you want to kick us off? Are you keeping those descriptive words for the phenomenon, or are you consigning them to Room 101?
If by his submission he means, you know, putting definitive labels on things, and that he's worried about the kind of the associations that we drag along with those labels, then yeah, it can go in Room 101. However, if he's talking about using the labels in a sense of exploration, then it shouldn't go into Room 101.
Dan is trying to ruin the scoring metric after
I'm really not.
Submissions again. I kept this one simple after the feedback from listeners last time when Dan couldn't stick to a 0 to 10 or a 1 to 10, jumping in with 11s and 0.5s. So I'm going to go with your first one, Dan, yes, it's descriptive words, so we're going to be bidding that one. Dan's already asked, and he's not getting away with it, to not have any decisive votes on this one, and he will be getting them. I might leave Mick West's for Dan. Dave, I'll ask you to come in on that one then. So descriptive words for the phenomenon.
Yeah, I think until we're never going to definitively know what it is, so I think we should keep it for now.
Oh, so this is the first time we're going to have a decisive third vote, and it's going to land on Gaucho. So John,
it depends how he interprets it, because I had two different ways.
It doesn't.
Look, I totally got why Dan interpreted it in those two different ways. And I get what Dave is saying, too. It's like, that's why I was saying this one's kind of tricky, because like, we use the words sort of just to classify it, but then I feel like we're kind of shooting ourselves in the foot sometimes, because we spent all these years calling, this is a perfect example, we spent all these years calling it flying saucers and UFOs when they were going through the sky and the water. And I also think too, like, you never know, like these terms, like this new term, UAP, or unidentified aerial phenomenon, which was actually given to us. It wasn't like the four of us here created that term. They were like, oh no, now it's called UAP, guys, here. That might just be straying us away from looking at the bigger picture, because it's as simple as a little three-letter thing that throws us off from, you know, seeing that thing that they've been telling us is actually a sheep is not a sheep. There's a wolf under there, but we've been calling it a sheep and looking at it like it was a sheep because they told us it was. So I don't know, but this one's tricky. You know what? I'm going to throw it into Room 101 only because of what I just said, but I totally get what Dave was saying too. So only for the, because of what I just said, I'm throwing it in Room 101, but if not, I get it.
It's gone deeper sad. Descriptive words for the phenomenon. Crypto, terrestrial, ultra terrestrial, UAP, UFO. It's something we don't know what it is. Let's not pigeonhole it. Yeah, so that's being binned. That's being chucked into room 101. So the guys agree with Deep on that one largely. Awesome. Thank you very much for that one, Deep. And we look forward again to hearing more from Deep, controversial or not, in 2021. Next up, another podcast host has been really good with myself and gave me a lot of hints and advice and tips along the way is Ryan Sprague of the awesome Somewhere in the Skies podcast. Ryan also is a co-host on several different TV projects as well, and this year released a very successful follow-up to his previous book, again, Somewhere in the Skies, which is, I'm probably going to get this one wrong, but a human approach to an alien subject, or it was the other way around, but The book itself looks at the human element of abduction experiences. Really, really good. There's some really fascinating cases in there as well. It's one you can read from start to finish, or you can pick up and go into different cases that might interest you as well. So Ryan's book is still available at Amazon and other outlets as well. And if you have a look at Ryan's personal Facebook and Twitter accounts, you'll see he's got some signed ones normally for sale as well, which I'd recommend. So Ryan has sent in. So the recent ones, the last three, sorry, have been pretty much keeping a theme for the last year or two. We're going to take a little step back with Ryan's, who wants to put into room 101. He wants to submit the Roswell slides debacle from May 2015. He says they were one of the most embarrassing moments in UFO history. The live event in Mexico City was a joke. The outcome was hilariously offensive to the young Native American boy who the slide turned out to be of, and those involved remain untarnished in this amnesia field we find ourselves in. So that was May 2015. It actually started a few years before that as well. This is something I'm going to throw to Dave first, because Dave is a bit of a font of all knowledge with these sorts of things. Basically, Dave, the background to this one was that someone's, as I'd read it, someone's grandkid found slides in the attic, basically one of those, and ended up skipping right forward to the May 2015, being put on a presentation, but some journalist got involved with in Mexico City, and they basically showed what was purported to be the Roswell alien body on screen, but things kind of very quickly went downhill, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it kind of snowballed into farce, which, you know, a few subjects in ufology have, like the Star Child skull, which was proven to be 100% human DNA. You had the Nazca mummies, which I don't know if you remember those from a couple of years ago. I mean, that was just equally as embarrassing, to be honest. And for Gaia to put out a 6-7 episode series on that behind a subscription paywall was just a joke. But yeah, the Roswell slides, I mean, one of the actual photos that were published, it actually had the museum label next to it, and it said exactly what it was. It was like a small child.
And that famously came out, and similar to the recent debrief photo, it wasn't a photo the debrief had, they just happened to post it online, but the fighter pilot's picture, that within hours, people had pictures of this Batman balloon that was on sale that had the same shape, and very quickly something similar happened with the Roswell slides, where only hours, I believe it was live streamed as well, it was still on the live stream, and people found during a very long live stream, because there was loads of speakers, that the plaque actually read, as you say, the museum's label and what it was as well.
It was. I mean, and the fact that people were equating this with Roswell when it clearly wasn't, because of the size of it. But the person involved, Haymin Musan, he's got a very bad reputation when it comes to alien artifacts. He was one of the people behind the Nazca mummies as well recently. So I don't think there's a lot you can really say. I mean, like the Atacama skeleton as well. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
From a couple of years ago. I mean, that was taken. I mean, that was Emery Smith and people like that. Jimmy Church banged on about it for months and months. And they took it with them to conferences. I mean, if that was a real alien skeleton, there is no way they would be able to manhandle that. and take it around conferences for people to drool over and breathe over and everything like that. That'd be kept in a suitcase in a warehouse on the ground in the middle of the desert somewhere. So the Roswell slides, you know, it's just, Ryan's right, it is one of the most embarrassing moments, like the alien autopsy as well, those videos.
And just to expand on that, and I'll move on to Gaucho. Cheers, Dave. Not just the Roswell slides, but Ryan Sprague is making the point that these events that end up getting put on that are badly researched and within minutes or hours are exposed. John, I mean, it's clear that these aren't going to be something we want to keep in ufology, but do you think there is enough of a pushback or comeback on those that are involved in these? Because Ryan seems to feel people just get away with these sorts of events and then can just go on to do something else.
People do get away with these kinds of things because, like Dave said, Jaime Musan is still working. Like, he's still around. And anything that has to do with Jaime Musan for me is like a no. I don't even pay attention. And it's actually crazy because I remember Richard Dolan, if I'm not mistaken, was part of that, right? Am I
yeah.
wrong?
Yeah. He was part of that, and then he quickly backed away from it.
I mean, but that's why you also have to be careful who you team up with too, because that right away, if somebody comes to me and tells me they have slides from Roswell, first thing I'm going to want to do is see the slides myself. And if I see it, there's all these, have you guys noticed there's always like these little shriveled up alien baby bodies that they keep showing everywhere? And I'm like, yeah. Didn't Greer had one, right? In one of his documentaries.
Yeah. Or was it that's a karma one, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, I wish that we could actually find something like that. But if something like that did exist, just like Dave said, I don't think anyone would be able to walk around with it. And if I had a alien artifact, a real alien artifact, like a dead alien, a real one, if I called Dave and said, hey, I got a dead alien in my house, you're not going to believe it, I think it would take 15 minutes, 20 minutes before I disappeared off the map if it was a real dead alien. So for us to be, it's sad too, because it's like, it shows how much we want to have answers and people take advantage of that. So definitely room 101.
See, for me, that sort of stuff, like you say, if anyone did claim to have anything that was potentially ET on their person and they did manage to even get on an aircraft, that's the kind of stuff that aircraft go missing and never get found because of, and it's landed on some island somewhere that is taken away, removed, and then, you know, what happens to the people unfortunately happens. Not saying that has happened in any case, but that's the sort of extremes I think that sort of smoking gun evidence would be protected. Dan, your thoughts then on incidents like the Roswell slides and those sorts of events?
It's fairly straightforward, isn't it? It's definitely one for me to just throw into room 101 without much thought. I just add that oftentimes there are people in the community, like Dave and John, who see these grifters coming from a mile away. So whenever these events happen, it's always worth just have a bit of a research around Twitter, search the event name and the names behind the event in Google, and just see what's associated with them, because you'll save yourself a lot of letdown and disappointment.
Agree. So I've already wrote down, I think, three answers here, but I'm assuming they're going to be correct anyway. Gaucho, are we going with, are we binning and consigning this to room 101, or are we keeping it in ufology?
No, we're grabbing it by the belt. We're throwing it in 101. We're kicking the door closed behind it, basically.
Ben, Dan, are you binning, are you keeping?
Yeah, I'm kicking that door.
You're locking the door behind. And Dave?
Oh, yeah, it's going in. No questions.
Absolutely. So, yeah, Ryan Sprague, thank you very much for that. And again, like I say, folks, Christmas is right around the corner. Amazon Prime is available. Go buy Ryan's book. Listen to the podcast as well. It's someone I've taken a lot of inspiration from. So thanks very much for that, Ryan. Appreciate that one. Next up, we have David Marceau. David was a guest on Unidentified Season 2. He was someone I got in touch with and got one of his first interviews fresh from Unidentified when his episode aired as well. David is a really good guy and has stayed involved within the community too, getting online, getting involved, and done a lot of good charity work this year as well, doing his Gentleman's Ride, motorcycle ride, I believe it's called, which raised some cash as well. So Dave's doing a very British thing and laughing at the name Gentleman's Ride. I believe that's you know, we talked about that childish maturity before. That's it. Sorry, yeah, man. It's yeah. It's a British thing. I understand. That's all right. But yeah, so David's a great guy, and I'll play the audio clip now of David's suggestion.
I love science. I believe in science. In large part, this is due to the scientific method. I can trust that when a scientist makes a bold new claim, that it is true because that claim has been published, peer-reviewed, and repeated. That claim will be untainted by political opinion, whether it supports or defies political opinion. Science is truth. I also have a problem with science when this same academic rigor is applied to proving life on other planets. A UFO sighting is not repeatable. Science cannot prove life on other planets solely based on eyewitness accounts, despite the fact that there are thousands of them. Yet, the UFO community continues to look to the scientific community for validation, validation which will never come based on current standards of evaluation. If the UFO community were to ask the legal community to weigh in on this, the legal community would not use the scientific method. They would use something more like a preponderance of evidence. They would not even look for 100% proof. The legal community would look for a likelihood. It is more likely than not, based on the thousands of eyewitness accounts, there is intelligent life on other planets, and it comes here and observes us. So, my question to the panel is, should we in the UFO community continue to look to science and its scientific method to prove what we already know? Or should we instead take a legal route and use a preponderance of evidence or some other standard?
Thank you very much to David Marceau for that suggestion. So David is looking to center Room 101, the idea that we continue to use the scientific method. This is one that I think will cause a little bit of debate, because it's something personally I am all for, but I do see David's point and what he's getting at. Dan, I am going to come to you first on this one. So, yeah, so David had a little question at the end there anyway, and he's going towards, should we use a more legal approach where it's a likelihood, where given the weight of evidence and the likelihood and the percentage chance this is happening, or do we continue to go with a scientific approach?
I really love this one. One of my closest friends is a lawyer, and we always talk about this and how there's just such overwhelming evidence that we're at the point where it's beyond reasonable doubt. And that if you can convince people in a court of law, and that's enough to, you know, well, enough in some places to take a man's life, then it's perfectly fit to use in this instance. David's question also made me think of, I don't know if you guys came across this, but in 2016, there was a study done with 1,500 scientists who were asked about their ability to reproduce results of papers that were said to be peer-reviewed. 70% of researchers tried and failed to reproduce another scientist's experiment, and more than half of the people asked failed to reproduce their own experiments. They go on to say that rather than taking that as a sign that the work is wrong, they take it that the paper is correct and that they've done something wrong. That, to me, bottoms out science, pretty much. It just pulls the rope from the bottom, because that's the whole point of the scientific principle, right? Is that you can reproduce something perfectly and go, oh, well, I've observed this thing, so it's an objective reality between us, therefore it's a scientific principle. So I'm going to go with David's suggestion and be brave here, and I'm going to vote to throw this in room 101.
So you're going with binning the scientific approach that people argue for in favour of, it would be something else. And Dan, actually, 90% of listeners couldn't recreate your Mobius strip with a glass of water technique that you discussed on the previous roundtable due to not
being... It doesn't mean that it's not right, though, according to science. No, science backs me in this.
We're not all triple jointed. But do you know what? I'm surprised. I really liked David's point. I thought this was a really interesting one. It really got me thinking as well, because at first I was like, well, you can't just bin the scientific method. It's what we want scientists, and we want mainstream scientists to get more involved in this. But he makes the point that, do you know what, actually, it's not going to work for what we're trying to do. And you even look at things like, you know, SETI and those types of institutes and anyone else, like you're trying to use something that's very black and white and repeatable, that, oh well, we find a radio signal, yep, can we find it again, yep, oh look, it's repeating. And that's not what happens in this subject as far as we can see. And is it something else really obvious that we're missing out? And like you say, from a legal standpoint, it's enough that a likelihood can condemn someone to death and the death penalty without being 100%. There's no video evidence of it. There's no photographic evidence. There might not even be DNA evidence, but there's enough in the circumstantial that, yeah, do you know what? This person is going to be in jail for life, or, you know, as I said, the death penalty. So that's a really interesting point. And I am surprised that you've went with been the scientific method for the reasons given. So I'll pass that one over to Dave. Dave, what's your thoughts on what Dave Marceau is looking to put in room 101?
Well, I think he's right in the... You know, we are our scientific community is hamstrung by what has come before them. If you think about Einstein and Newton and, you know, all those other, you know, the Fermi paradox and all that kind of thing, our understanding is based on decades old understanding of subjects. It's only recently, when quantum theory has come into the mix, that we are starting to develop a different understanding of what's going on. But to apply something to like UAPs or portals or Skinwalker Ranch or anything like that, you can't do it with what we currently know, because it doesn't behave in the same way. I mean, we don't know how a craft can come in from space, or possibly come in from space, hover, and then do a deep dive to the bottom of the Mariana Trench, or, you know, off Guadalupe Island or things like that. It's very hard for the public to understand what is going on if science can't explain it in a way that is understandable. And I think because we can't repeat the experiments, we're always going to struggle with actually trying to make sense of it.
And with so much, you look at things as going and developing from A to B to C, going along, like we can look at a timeline of human history and the way technology's moved and evolved. And even if you look back at the way things were 100 years ago or 50 years ago, things are so different now that you need to really look at, if you want to see where this technology is from, or what it can do, or how it operates, or, you know, where it operates potentially, what time it operates in, you know, if it even uses that sort of same concept, that it's not A to B to C, it's A to F, A to W. It's so far down the line. As Chris Mellon said, it's not just next generation, it's generations upon generations upon generations of it.
Exactly. If you gave Isaac Newton an iPhone and asked him to develop a new app for it to explain his theory of gravity, would he be able to do it?
I bet he wouldn't have a charger. No one's ever got a charger on them, so yeah.
He could drop the phone, though.
He could drop the phone. But then the screen would crack and he'd have to buy a new one.
He could probably find an Apple genius somewhere that could repair that for them. Apple don't sponsor the show yet, so, you know, I'm not going to plug them too much. But you're right, though. It's that whole you can always make the argument of you put a piece of technology from now back in a certain point in time, and even the technology we've got now going back 50 years, even 100, 200 years ago, it was witchcraft, and you'd be burnt at the stake potentially, you know, for that sort of stuff. So it's crazy how far advanced, and all we're asking people, again, like, none of us are claiming to be scientists as far as I'm aware here, okay? So definitely not as a podcaster, but we are asking people to, instead of going that reverse and going, look where we were 200 years ago to now, we are looking, going, imagine where we could be in 200 years and how the technology we've got now will be so out of date and so left behind. We might not have cars anymore. Smartphones might be a thing of a long gone thing of the past. You know, social media may not even exist. We talked before we went on air, we were joking about, you know, VR headsets and that sort of experience, and, you know, Neuralinks, and maybe that'll be, that might even be outdated technology in 200 years, the way things are advancing. SpaceX, just to give, you know, what they've done recently, I watched the recent test launches, and then finally on the third launch, yes, it blew up on landing pretty spectacularly, but they got the data they wanted, and you're seeing how quickly they're advancing what they're trying to do as well. So
yeah, I think we got there's still an arrogance in the scientific community where they believe that what they say is correct. I mean, scientists have got research papers going back decades which promote certain theories, and if that theory is proved to be wrong, they will fight against any new science coming through.
Yep.
Yeah.
Rather than just admit that, you know, that it's wrong. Gaucho, do you want to come in on that one then?
Yeah, definitely. I think Dave touched on something there at the end that I totally vibe with. The human ego seems to get in the way of a lot of things, basically of how we see reality and our understanding of what is happening basically in life. I think we talked about it on the round table, but it's like, I always liked science and art in high school. Not a big fan of math, but, it was interesting. It was fascinating to see, like, you know, every little aspect of molecules and learning about biology and all this kind of different stuff and doing science experiments. But I realized that, you know, every explanation, every definition, every concept that we have is created by the human mind. It's a human construct. So how do you expect to explain a alien phenomenon within the parameters of human science? I think that might be one of our biggest flaws when we look out into, you know, when we look out into the universe and into reality. That's why I feel like consciousness is so hard for so many people to grasp, and this idea of, you know, multidimensional theories and all that kind of stuff is just something that people talk about, but the common general public is not really thinking about consciousness. So yeah, for me, I think, you know, I personally believe too that science is actually, when it comes to the UFO phenomenon, it's kind of tripping us up. So it might, you never know. I mean, in the future, it may lead to some great development. We might understand something about this, but it's like, you can't study something that defies every logical explanation we can have. You know, you can't try to put a number on it if there's no number to put on it, basically.
So Dan's already told me that he's going with binning this one. Are you saying, Gaucho, you're going with bin too, yeah?
Yeah, I just crunched it up into a little ball and I threw it into the bin.
Awesome. And Dave, what are your thoughts then? Scientific method for studying UAP?
I think purely because we're hamstrung by what we know and what we don't know, then yeah, it's going to go in.
Cool. And listen, folks, we have never said we're going to come up with a solution. We're just saying that maybe there should be something else looked at as well. So I'm surprised at that one, but David Marceau, the panel have agreed with you, and the guys have chosen unanimously to bin the scientific method for study of UAPs in favour of something else that might give us better results as well. Okay, and next up, before we take a break, we've got Jeremy McGowan. Jeremy, similar to David Marceau, appeared in episode Series 2 of Unidentified. Jeremy had his own sighting and experience while on active duty, and again, as someone, he had one of his first interviews on the podcast, so check that out in the archive. He stayed extremely active within the community, getting extremely involved with the Skyhub project as well. Currently has his fundraiser on the go, which he is building the Skyhub platform. So that is something very much well worth checking out. So Jeremy McGowan, really nice guy as well. Great to talk to. Hit him up on Twitter. He sent in a submission via text. He wanted to put in Room 101, and this goes hand in hand with, I think, a little bit like Sean Cahill's. I'm putting into Room 101 shaking hands, cell phone videos, and any photo or video without the original EXIF data. Also, any fighter jet with a bloody flare. So, Jeremy has taken no prisoners with that one. We will kick off with Gaucho. So, Jeremy doesn't like bloody videos, bloody photos, unclear evidence, basically, including some of the best equipment that these fighter jets seem to have.
Yeah, I mean, he's making a point that gets brought up often. But if we did do that, if we did somehow cancel that out, there would be no videos or photos to look at. So I think we're going to have to keep that one. I get it. You know, people often point that out. But I don't think it's that simple to get a clear photo in that moment that you're experiencing something. And if you have a camera on you, which not everyone is carrying a DSLR or some kind of high quality camera that they could, you know, shoot a zoom lens on it that professional photographers use to get a crisp HD photo. Like, even if you take your iPhone out and you zoom it out, you zoom into, you know, the whatever you're seeing in the sky or whatever you're experiencing. First of all, if you're filming, it's probably going to be shaky because of the zoom. And then second of all, it's all the way zoomed in, so it's probably not even going to be clear. So this idea that I think Skyhub and that kind of stuff might be a better option, but I also don't know how clear. I haven't seen the videos from Skyhub. How clear is the footage, guys? Have you guys seen it?
Just now, just depending on the equipment. And this is something, again, just to plug my interview with Steve McDaniel, we talked about that the footage tends to be at the moment. It's still a light in the sky. It's very much you can see something going from point A to point B across the hemisphere, the atmosphere, and they're just looking at, you know, different weather phenomena, speeds of travel, if there's other things within the shot as well, like other aircraft they could take measurements off of. So it's not as if you're not going to see a spacecraft in any detail on the cameras being used.
So
That is planned to change, though, right?
Yes.
Because at the moment, they just have the one kind of fishbowl lens or fisheye lens. And they want that to essentially identify, you know, the point of light in the sky. And then there's a second camera that has a much more telescopic lens that can kind of just zoom in there and get a nice close-up.
And that was Steve's point, though, as well. What, there's a lot of possibilities with Skyhub, and obviously we'll talk about Skyhub another time more, but it's all at a cost, and this is something with Jeremy himself. He's doing a fundraiser, not because he doesn't want to pay for it himself, but this is some expensive kit. And as you'll know, Gaucho, being a man who like, likes his cameras and his filming, as I know that's like Dan's background as well, that you can have a lot of cameras and you can get a lens, or you can get a nice lens, you can get a very nice lens, you could get a super nice lens, but those go into thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. So it really depends on cost and price and everything as to what kind of clear image. But you're right, Skyhub might be a really viable image for that. And I've brought this up several times on the podcast, but one of my favourite things of 2020 has been the vindication of the blimp, where people were filming and taking photos of the blimp over the New York Jets game from a distance, from the highway, in reasonable light with all their fancy new iPhones, Samsungs and cameras, and people still couldn't get a good shot of what turned out to be the blimp advert. I think it was Gucci, am I right? That has like the LED screen on it. But from a distance, it did look like, you know, your classic UFO, big rotating, you know, saucer in the sky, lights flying around it. And people still argued, even when it was confirmed, no, this was the blimp above the Jets game, that, you know, that it could have been something else. So that makes the point right there. there's something in 2020 in reasonable conditions. Hundreds of people saw it, caused a bit of a traffic jam looking at it, and they still couldn't get a clear shot of it with modern technology.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just imagining like what it would look like if I were trying to get a super HD clear shot of a UFO. Like, I would literally have to change my lens, grab a tripod, hook up the camera to the tripod, focus, fix my ISO, my aperture, and try to get the best shot I could. And by the time I do all that, the thing will probably be gone, and who knows what could happen. I'm saying I get it, and he makes perfect sense with what he's saying. And yeah, of course, if we could have HD super 4K footage of a UFO, then that would be awesome. But I don't think we're going to get it, and we have to work with what we got. You know, if we were to throw this into Room 101, we'd get rid of Go Fast, FLIR, and the gimbal.
Yeah, that's a really good, Dan, that's a really good shout Gaucho's just brought up there, that would we be then, and I think this is maybe what Jeremy's getting at, would we be getting rid of those videos and that we know and love from TTSA?
Yeah, it would potentially mean we were. But there is said to be better data there, right? And better videos. So that might be a loophole there for this one. But yeah, John and Jeremy are both right. We're speaking to the quality of the data again, aren't we? And it would be great to get the best data in the world, but we can't even get the data that's locked behind closed doors at the moment. So I don't really want to throw it into Room 101, just because that's what we have to work with right now.
And just before we throw to Dave on that one, so that's two keeps. So regardless what Dave says, it's staying. I also, just for my two cents, I quite like still the intriguing photo or the conversation starter. Even the you know, some of the Mars rover photos that there was a bit of controversy. I posted someone else's photo from the, you know, I don't have a personal link to the Mars rover, but it was an interesting photo of, you know, just an object which seemed to be hovering in the sky. And I hadn't even heard the language before of it's an artifact, which is, you know, just something left over from the various, not to get into the detail of it because I don't know it, but, you know, the various images overlapping, you know, or the moving along, that's fine. But do you know what? It did still look a little bit like the gimbal saucer hovering at a distance in the sky. I don't see anything wrong with looking at those kind of pictures. I'm not knowingly posting fake images because even regardless of the fact that more than likely was an artifact, we still don't know either way. That's the thing, right? So there's still a mystique to this that I like from when I was a child, and I still like to see videos and pictures of things that make me go, oh, I wonder, or what is that? Or it looks a little bit different. There's still that is exciting, and I would hate to get rid of, you know, even like, you know, a family member or a friend or someone posting online that I've just taken this picture outside, that you, and we all do the same thing. You tap on it, you try and, you know, enlarge the screen. You want to look at the detail when you're looking for stuff, and then you find out it's a kid's party balloon, don't you, Dave?
No, what are you trying to say? I've never taken pictures of kids' party balloons.
But yeah, what are you thinking? As a man who, you work in print, so again, your photographs are part of your livelihood with this.
Yeah, I mean, as Gaucho will tell you, I mean, when you take a photo on a high spec camera, DSLR or whatever, you get a certain image quality, a certain pixel resolution to that image. And that image could be like 30, 40, up to 60, 80 meg, even higher than that. But when you actually compress it down to a usable file size, I mean, if you're optimizing for web use, for example, you are getting rid of a lot of the information in that photograph, which I think is the problem that you have, because most images online will be 72 dots per inch, which is perfectly optimized for online use. They load quicker, which everyone wants on a website. You don't want to be sat there like Gary McKinnon waiting for a picture of a UFO to come over your modem for 6 hours. So, you know, these, we have that kind of problem as well, because people want hits to their website and they don't want people to be hanging around waiting for images to load. But he does have a fair point, because, I mean, as you said, with the Goodyear blimp for the Jets game, I mean, that was the classic case of people saying before, oh, we've got all this great technology, why can't you take a clear picture of a UFO? And it's like, well, there you go. You've just tried and you failed.
Could you get a clear picture of a blimp?
Yeah. Oh, no, exactly. And you knew it was a blimp. You could see a Goodyear sign on the side of it. But if you go outside and you haven't got a tripod and you've got a pair of decent binoculars and you look up to the stars, if you're holding those with just your hands, without the tripod, your arms will be shaking and you cannot focus, and it looks like that star is dancing about like a UFO. So that's the other thing. You need high-quality kit. You need to be in the right place at the right time, and you need anything in the sky to play ball and stay still long enough for you to be able to take a decent photo, which it's not going to do.
Yeah, myself and my wife a couple of months ago spent quite a while at the window looking at what we thought was a star moving in the sky, but not even just looking through the camera lens that we're trying to do on the phone, because again, like you say, you don't realise how much you're shaking when you think you're being perfectly still. Yeah. Even just standing looking at it, you don't realise that you're not standing perfectly still. Your body's still moving, and even that, and then it looked like a really clear night, but you can't see some of the light cloud passing in front. So all of that makes it look like this thing was moving in the sky and it wasn't. I brought up one of the star maps I've got on my phone that Dan suggested quite a while back. And yeah, you go, oh, it's actually in the exact same place this star should be in. So yeah, it's been nearly 45 minutes.
It's not just the UFO community as well. It's like the paranormal investigative community. They go on ghost hunts and they say, oh, why have you never got a picture of a ghost? It's because, well, that ghost is just going to be there for a second or two. The best equipment that we have is our own eyeballs, because we can pick up things and we're not shaking when we're looking at something, unless it's freezing cold.
Yeah,
absolutely. Dave,
technology will never compete with what we can see with our own eyes and our mind. But then, you know, we're not going to say, oh, hang on a minute, let me just get my iPhone out of my pocket and click.
And that's true. And I'll go back to when I saw that black triangle, even if I did driving at 60 miles an hour, which I think is 80 or 90 kilometres, I'm not too sure in the conversion for listeners stateside, then I would have taken that phone out, been moving at speed, taken a picture of the sky, and you wouldn't have seen anything. That there would have been nothing there to see, even though I was seeing it with my eye. That was it. So we've got two keeps. Dave, are you bidding or keeping that then?
I can't remember what it was now, but yeah, key. It doesn't matter, does it?
So the bloody photographs, the bloody videos.
Let's keep them.
Yeah, so we're looking to keep that. So yeah, thank you for the suggestion, Jeremy, but we're not sending that to room 101. Folks, after this short message, we'll be back with Simeon Hine, Jay from Project Unity, UFO Joe Murgia, Mick West, you'll want to hear that one, and also the gents on the podcast have got their own suggestions, as well as a few of the listeners' choice selections too. So stick around, we'll be right back.
UFOs seem to be invading both our skies and our news outlets like never before. And more people are starting to look up and are wondering who or what might be out there. In 2016, Ryan Sprague introduced the world to countless UFO encounters that had never been made public before. And now, in the second edition of his book, he revisits these events and introduces brand new UFO cases in Somewhere in the Skies, a human approach to the UFO phenomenon. How have these events changed the lives of those involved? And what might it tell us about the phenomenon? With in-depth follow-ups, brand new chapters, and detailed testimony from credible witnesses and insight from those in the psychological, academic, and scientific fields, Somewhere in the Skies, a human approach to the UFO phenomenon, weaves together a story of stories, attempting to get to the heart of these mysteries one experience at a time. Available now on Amazon in both paperback and ebook. To learn more, visit somewhereintheskies.com.
Thank you. baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little rain. Meditative game of state full on meta. Can't imagine how it could have been any better. I got to the top of the stairs and there he was. Like, you awake? I was about to abduct you, cuz. I jumped back and nearly kissed myself. Then I climbed out the window after the elf. And I woke up in my bed and there was something on my head. And everything was weird and everything was red. And I called up my boys. They thought this was noise. They thought it was a dream. They thought it was my toys. They thought it was my problems. And they think I should take care of me. And I don't know what to do because it doesn't really scare me.
Guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.